Welcome to episode 465 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about consumer entertainment technology.
And tonight we're joined by a very special guest. I think it's been more than a year since we've been joined by him. It is none other than Rob H. from the AV Rant podcast. Welcome back, Rob.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. I did not think it had been an entire year, but it very well might be. Time certainly flies, but I'm very happy to be back and really happy that Richard is here tonight as well, because usually when I've been a guest on this podcast, Richard has been away. And
exactly. I was just going to say, it's been longer than that for me, because yes. I missed at least the last time, if not two.
Yeah, the last time that you were here, I don't think I let you get more than about three words in. So that will not be the case tonight. I will not repeat that. That is my solemn vow, and watch me break it.
So we do have a lot to cover. We've also got some listener feedback. There's one that I have not included. It was long. There's a lot to cover. We're going to save that one for next week. One came in via email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. The other one was a direct message to me on Twitter. My Twitter account is at Josh Pollard. All the rest of our contact information will be at the end of the show or in the show notes on the website. So without further ado, let's jump right into this message from Roger. He says, "Hey, I am still a dedicated Windows Media Center user, and I'm wondering if you can solve a mystery for me. I have two HD Home Run Primes on my network. I'm using Tuner Salad to enable all six tuners on my Media Center PC. I often get a pop-up warning that there were no tuners available to record show X, when in reality, several of the tuners on each device are available. The shows usually record anyway, but it's annoying. If I look at the tuner web pages, neither of them are showing any errors of any kind. And I guess I'll make this two questions. I'm running Windows Media Center on an Intel NUC using an external," he says DAS. I've never heard DAS before. He's talking about an externally connected USB hard drive here, to store media connected by USB. The problem is that when I reboot the NUC, if the USB drive is attached, it hangs looking for the Windows files. The only workaround is to unplug the USB drive and wait until the Windows splash screen loads before plugging in the drive. I've checked all the settings in the BIOS, and it's not set to boot from USB. Do you have any ideas?" So, Roger, first off, thanks for the message. It always like warms my heart to hear of people who are still using Windows Media Center.
I know!
Even though like Richard and I don't even use Windows Media Center anymore. Unfortunately, I don't think you have three people on this show tonight to get a potential answer from, and I don't think any of us have any answers for you at all on these weird mystery problems.
Yeah, really strange. Although I remember having a very similar problem with my Drobos that were attached by USB to my Media Center PC, and it was, in fact, related to the BIOS, even though I wasn't booting from the USB drive. It was so long ago. It was like before I moved to this house. So it was at least 5 years ago that I had this problem. And I don't remember how I solved the problem.
That's great. Right? Thanks, Richard.
So I'm glad I could share that.
I was on the edge of my seat. I'm like, this is going to be something that he might be able to use.
No. But I just wanted to share.
Right. It's empathy. That's all you've got. Empathy.
But the hope is maybe it is something in the BIOS. I was like, could it possibly be the way that the drives are formatted? Although like reformatting them is going to be a hassle and a half. I was like, Why is a USB drive looking for Windows files in the first place? Are you running a program off of the USB drive? Like that's where the program's files are stored. It is very confusing why this would be the issue, just not allowing it to boot.
I have one idea, and this gets super nerdy, and I'm not going to be able to get into all the technical details, but if you've ever messed around with like dual booting a Windows computer, nowadays to do it, you have to do it through a command called bcd edit, like beta, charlie, delta, edit. look that up. See if you've got something weird in your BCD edit stuff, your BCD configuration, because maybe there's something on there that is pointing at that USB drive, and that might screw it up, but that is the only thing I can think of. So Google BCD edit, the commands aren't that difficult. It'll be like BCD edit list or something like that to see what's going on. Microsoft's documentation on it is actually really good. I have to go through this all the time. So hopefully that'll help you find something. Otherwise, I don't have a good answer on that one.
I had one last out there thought, which was like, when he says it's not set to boot from USB, does that mean it's USB is not in the boot list, or that is just not number one in the list? Because if it's not in the list at all, sometimes it actually kind of needs to be, strangely. Even though you're never going to boot from USB, USB needs to be one of the boot options. It just has to be low down on the list. So potentially add USB to the list if it's not there, or, well, he already checked the priorities, obviously, but it's the only other way out there idea I have.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Add USB to the list, just make it after your internal hard drives. I like that.
Who knows?
On the media center side, the only thing I can think of is that it might be tuner salad messing with things, but I doubt it. For those who don't remember, which might be a lot of you if you haven't been using Media Center in a while, tuner salad was the add-in that would allow Media Center to have more than four of each type of tuner, because that was the default limit inside of Windows Media Center. You could only have four of each different type. So like four over-the-air tuners, four cable card tuners, that sort of thing. And if you've got two HD Home Run Primes, that's six. You needed something like Tuner Salad to make that all work. So maybe try uninstalling Tuner Salad or something. But that might not be the answer you're looking for either, because you probably needed those six tuners, or else maybe you wouldn't have them. Or maybe you just needed more than three. Maybe four is enough. I don't know. Because your only real option to get more than three is to get six, because from HD Home Run, they only sell three tuner devices. So for cable card, at least.
He says it usually records anyway, man. So, I mean, obviously the hardware is being recognized. The drivers are actually working in the background. Just something somewhere thinks the tuners aren't there.
Not to pull a Richard here, but I think I had similar issues. And I wasn't even using Tuner Salad, but I did have an HD Home Run Prime, just one of them. And I do seem to remember times where I would fire up Media Center and I'd see a bunch of these messages pop up from previous recordings, but all my recordings were still there and intact. But it is super annoying.
Yeah, because you have to acknowledge every one of them, I believe. I believe they all have an okay to dismiss.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I forgot about that part. That's the worst.
Oh dear. Well, not a tremendous amount of help, and that bothers me because all we do is answer questions on AV Rant, and so I'm always upset when we don't have something solid to offer. But I am no help on that one at all. Never used tuners on my home theater PC.
Hopefully, our smart listeners have some ideas.
Yeah, that is the really nice thing about this audience, is they are so good at helping each other out. So hopefully someone has some ideas. Send them in to us. We will pass them on to Roger, and hopefully we can get Roger some solutions. All right, last piece of feedback. This came from Chris. Chris has written in a lot previously. Chris is perhaps the biggest fan of Cortana that I know. He's also still really into Windows Phone. He just loves Microsoft products, and that's cool. And he's really passionate about it. And because of that, he's also really knowledgeable. We got some stuff wrong, and he kind of took issue with how we reported on the Dolby Vision stuff last time, because we didn't really go into full detail on it. And I kind of didn't go into full detail for two reasons. One, kind of figured we might have Rob on. Two, all of the stuff that they shipped to everybody when it became generally available was the same as it was when it was released to insider members like a month prior. And we did go in depth on what TVs and stuff were supported then. And none of that really changed. So I didn't feel like rehashing all of that. he did really take issue with our coverage of the new voice assistant stuff that's available with the Xbox. We basically said, yeah, of course it makes sense to add Amazon's assistant. It's way better. It probably does way more than Cortana. And it's ridiculous that it does a lot of the stuff before Cortana did. Well, apparently most of the stuff that Amazon's voice assistant is doing now, Cortana has been able to do for a little while. We just didn't really know because, like most of the rest of the planet, we don't use Cortana. And I don't mean to slam Cortana or Chris, but it's just, it's a distant third place assistant, and I don't use it, and neither does Richard, at least not on a daily basis.
Well, hey, you can say her name out loud on this podcast, and you can't say Amazon's assistant's name out loud, so that tells you how many people are using which one.
But part of that is because Microsoft and Google were smart enough to put a word before the assistant's name.
Well, but I mean, remember, we've talked about that Microsoft is actually considering getting rid of that requirement. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they won't change that.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I think his point really is that, in fact, not only do they have feature parity, but Cortana in some cases might be a better way of going here. And you're right. We don't have that exposure. And
right.
I think largely because Cortana was so late to the game in supporting some of the capabilities that, frankly, we've been doing with our Amazon devices for years, not with regard to the Xbox, obviously, but just in general. Oftentimes mm-hmm. we come at that with a perhaps unreasonably negative slant.
Yeah. Yeah. So Chris is going to keep us in check when it comes to Cortana, and he's really plugged in on what's going on at the Xbox too, and all the Dolby Vision stuff. So speaking of Dolby Vision stuff, it's one of the main reasons why we've got Rob H here. I always refer to Rob as the HDR expert. He kind of shrugs that off and tries to be humble about his knowledge of HDR, but I don't know anyone who knows more about HDR than Rob. So to me, you're the HDR expert.
Oh, all right. That still feels very odd on me. I will not wear that suit and feel comfortable in it. I'm not going to sleep in it like James Bond, but that's all right. I will endeavor to provide what information I can. And Richard said he wanted to put me in the hot seat, so I'm looking forward to it. That's what I'm here for.
There you go.
So let's get into this whole debacle over the Xbox One. Sort of. I mean, I guess technically it does support Dolby Vision, mm-hmm. but it doesn't support Dolby Vision in a way that anyone expected. And when Richard and I talked about it the previous couple of times, we didn't really understand why, because to us, Dolby Vision is Dolby Vision. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't it work on every TV that has a Dolby Vision logo down in the corner of the box? And my Xbox has a Dolby Vision logo in the corner, and my receiver has a Dolby Vision logo. Why wouldn't this all just work? So, Rob, why doesn't it all just work?
Right. So that's exactly it. In fact, Dolby has made efforts to simplify their logo program. When we used to have a gazillion different things on the audio side, now they just have one Dolby audio logo that is meant to cover everything. Right. And so they've made the effort to, I would say, oversimplify in this case. And of course, consumers are, my TV has the logo, my Xbox now has the logo. Why the heck wouldn't they talk to each other? That is what we would expect. So I think I'm going to start at the idea that there are multiple Dolby Vision profiles, and then each of those profiles can have multiple different levels. So not all Dolby Vision is the same would be the short way of saying that. There are 9 Dolby Vision profiles in the white paper that they released back in April, and all indications are now there might be 10, because in that document they did leave a reserved space for a 10th profile. Seems like that might be the culprit. And then there are 9 different levels for each of those 9 profiles. So the levels aren't too much of a concern. The levels are basically, you can think of it as how many pixels, because the levels define the resolution and the frame rate, and that's about it.
Okay.
So,
okay, that's easy enough to understand.
Right. All that really is the TV and the source have to talk to each other, and the TV has to say, this is how many pixels you can send me. And then the source goes, okay, I'll send you something at equal to or less than that. So the levels part, not too much of a worry, but the profiles part is kind of important. The profiles specify a codec that's being used, what is being used in the base layer, and what is being used in the enhancement layer, and we'll get into that in a little bit, and then the metadata that is also being sent and how that's encoded. So there's a whole bunch of different variations on that, 9 in the document, potentially 10 now. And when we go back to like when the Apple TV 4K first came out, you might recall that if you activated Dolby Vision on the Apple TV 4K, everything came out as Dolby Vision. And people quickly said, well, a lot of what I'm watching is not HDR of any kind. Why is my Dolby Vision mode on my TV still being activated? And then on the flip side of that, you now have an Xbox One X or an Xbox One S, and you say, you go into the settings and you turn on Dolby Vision, and you go into Netflix and you load up one of the Marvel shows that you know is in Dolby Vision. And yet, if you have a Vizio or a TCL or a 2016 LG television, it does not go into Dolby Vision mode, even though you know the source is providing a Dolby Vision signal. So it seems to just come back to these profiles. And TCL and Vizio and LG, those are largely the televisions that people are concerned with. Lots of people who are gamers have TCL and Vizio TVs because they're tremendous value. Lots of people have 2016 LG TVs. They've all responded to this, and I want to give credit to John Archer over at Forbes because he's the one who's really been on top of all of these companies to try and get some answers. And they basically, without being super explicit, all said there's a new version of a new profile of Dolby Vision that Dolby and Microsoft created. The TVs that have the very latest version of Dolby Vision, like Sony's TVs that got their Dolby Vision implementation not that long ago, and then the newest 2017 and 2018 TVs, they all seem to be able to handle this new profile. But older televisions and televisions that rely on a hardware chip to do Dolby Vision, they don't seem to support this new profile. And they've talked about this new profile being low latency. And then some people on the forums who've dug into the coding of it have said, well, this isn't like the Apple TV 4K, which goes into a base layer only profile. This is one of the options where all it sends out is Dolby Vision when it's in Dolby Vision mode. This seems to be a base layer plus enhancement layer system, but they're using what they're calling the minimal enhancement layer, which is how Sony's televisions work and required a change on the source side. So I'm trying to break this down a little bit. You can have a base layer. That could be any number of things. That could be a 1080p SDR signal. It could be a 4K HDR10 signal. Whatever it is, that's your base layer. And then you can have what they call now a full enhancement layer on top of that, which says, hey, if you're a Dolby Vision TV, go into Dolby Vision. And then there are keyframes in the video that contain the metadata that says, this is how bright the image is, this is how to tone map it, this is the electro-optical transfer function we're using right now. All that information is contained in these keyframes, and theoretically every frame could be a keyframe, but that's not usually how it's done. But for that to work, your display has to have a second HEVC decoder, because each of those keyframes is encoded as an HEVC file. And that seems to be the reason why you couldn't plug in one of the original Dolby Vision Ultra HD Blu-ray players to a Sony Dolby Vision television and have it play in Dolby Vision, because the Sony TVs are software only. They don't have a Dolby Vision hardware chip inside of them. They did it all via software, and they don't seem to have this second HEVC decoder in them. So the Apple TV 4K worked just fine on a Sony TV because it's only sending Dolby Vision, just the base layer. Didn't need a second decoder. But if you had an older Ultra HD Blu-ray player that was Dolby Vision, you needed the second HEVC decoder, and that didn't seem to work on Sony TVs. So now there is this minimal enhancement layer version. So you still got the base layer. It's going to be HDR10 in the case of Ultra HD Blu-rays or the Xbox One X. And then you have this minimal enhancement layer, which I find humorously is just sending a mid-gray picture. And so it's not a video frame, it's just a mid-gray picture, and it says, this is what middle gray should be now. Adjust yourself accordingly.
Oh, you mean like solid gray?
Yeah,
just gray.
one frame frame of solid medium gray, but medium in the sense of this is between the darkest and the brightest thing on the screen right now. So here's this gray frame, adjust yourself accordingly. So the new TVs, the Sony TVs, seem to be able to do that. Newer 2017, 2018 TVs all seem to be able to do that. But TVs that have the original Dolby Vision chips and are doing it in hardware, there's mention in the white paper of like, well, if your TV doesn't understand that enhancement layer, it's just going to revert to the base layer, which kind of makes sense. So
sure,
what TCL and Vizio are saying is, okay, there's a new profile. It's using a new enhancement layer. It's low latency, which indicates it's probably this minimal enhancement layer because it doesn't have to decode anything. It's just a gray field, but it doesn't understand that yet. So they're saying like, yeah, we're going to try to update our TVs via firmware, but we don't know when and we can't promise it'll be all models. So that's a little wishy-washy. Right. And then LG was even worse because they said, well, it only affects our 2016 TVs. It's only Netflix on the Xbox One right now, and you can already use our built-in app for that and watch that in Dolby Vision. So we haven't decided if we're going to bother with this at this point, was LG's response.
LG's response really sounded like, we're just not going to do this. They didn't actually come out and say it.
They didn't say full no.
But they came
no.
as close to saying that as they could without actually saying it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I have no idea if that is any help, if that explains things whatsoever. It shouldn't be like this, right? I mean, this isn't what consumers want. When they buy a TV that says Dolby Vision, they expect that whatever Dolby Vision source they're using will provide them Dolby Vision. Obviously, that's the expectation. But I mean, the good news and bad news, I would say, is that when it's part of Dolby Vision, Dolby is involved in every part of the signal chain. And when that Dolby Vision signal reaches the television manufacturer isn't deciding what to do with that signal. Dolby gives them the code and says, here's what your television needs to do when you get this signal. So a lot of this ends up being on Dolby's shoulders. Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm not sure if that's good.
You know, with your knowledge of this and your understanding of everything that's kind of played into this mess, what's your assessment on why or how this happened? Is this the result of either maybe too loose or too strict of, a contract for what Dolby Vision is and how it gets implemented? Or is it perhaps, something that Dolby's done that has enhanced Dolby Vision, but there's no way that old hardware can possibly keep up with it? I mean, where did this go wrong?
Right. I think we can look back to when Sony televisions got their Dolby Vision update as a little bit of a clue, because the Sony televisions never had a Dolby Vision hardware chip built into them, but they managed to get a software-only version of Dolby Vision functioning on Sony's TVs, and it worked for Sony's built-in apps as long as the app providers decided to update their software, because it was up to Netflix and Vudu, and Amazon hasn't done it yet on Sony's TVs, right? So it was this eagerness, I believe, that Dolby has, where they're like, hey, we can get Sony to plaster the Dolby Vision logo on their television, and we're trying to be the HDR format. Sony is a big, recognizable brand. That's beneficial to us. So if there's a way to get this working, we should probably do that. And they found a way to get it to kind of work, but it required that every source now had to be updated for this new profile that they created for Sony televisions. So I think that when a company like Microsoft comes to them and we're putting some pieces together and doing some speculation, but when they say this is a low latency version of Dolby Vision, this is a version that has a base layer and a minimal enhancement layer, all of this indicates that I think they want to use this for games. Right? Why would you need it to be low latency? Why would you need it to be minimal enhancement layer? Which means if you don't have a Dolby Vision TV, it's still rendering it in HDR 10. But if you do have a Dolby Vision TV, it can activate Dolby Vision mode. Why would you do those things only for Netflix? That doesn't really add up, right?
Right.
Netflix could just send you the base layer only version. They could update the app to do that. So I think, speculating, but widely believed, that they're aiming to have Dolby Vision games. And obviously Dolby wants to be a part of that. And I think that's the reason why they'd be willing to develop something that functions, but not for everyone. And it's going to require updates. And maybe there's some televisions that'll just, it'll never work and you'll have to buy a new TV.
I guess I wonder why Microsoft would want that, though. That doesn't seem to be beneficial to them in any way.
Except that there are people like literally petitioning them to have Dolby Vision on it. And the Xbox One is an Ultra HD Blu-ray player. And it doesn't support Dolby Vision. And it still doesn't yet. We're still waiting for the Ultra HD Blu-ray software in the Xbox One X and S to get updated to let you play Dolby Vision Ultra HD Blu-rays physical discs. So people were petitioning Microsoft to add Dolby Vision to the Xbox. I don't think this is what people meant. I don't think people meant, oh, only for Netflix and not on my TV. I don't, but people didn't think to put that in the petition, right? Like they didn't say, hey, Microsoft do this, but only if it completely works. They're like, oh, we did it. It just wasn't what you imagined. Right.
We met the requirements.
It's the monkey's paw wish, you know?
Wow.
Oh boy. Okay. So I think the one thing that we missed there was you mentioned that TCL is working on this. We mentioned that LG probably isn't going to do this for its 2016 sets. Just to be clear, it does sound like Vizio is working on this. So that they haven't specifically said, just like TCL, they haven't said, we're definitely going to do it on these particular sets or when. To any sort of timeline. Right.
Yeah.
But it does sound like they're working on it.
Oh, so yeah. And they were the first of the TV manufacturers to respond and say, yeah, we're aware of this. We're working on it, but we can't promise anything yet. So they were the first ones to do that.
Being an LG owner, obviously, I'm not very excited about this. But the thing that concerned me about LG's response is it could almost be interpreted as, oh, well, that 2016 model, that's 2 years old now. We're not going to upgrade significantly expensive two-year-old hardware that you just bought. And where else aren't they going to upgrade it? And are they going to continue to keep like a two-year back vision in their hardware upgrades? Because that's crap.
But we also don't know if there might legitimately be a reason that they can't. At which point it's hard to blame them for not doing something that they can't do. We don't know.
And so I would have liked to have heard that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess who knows if things were being, if this was even originally said in English and was translated or something. When they say we haven't decided, that sounds a lot worse to our ear than maybe what they meant. Giving them the benefit of the doubt, it might literally be we haven't decided because we don't have all the information yet, which is fair enough. That just that last part of the sentence wasn't, you know, communicated.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So I think that clears up this Dolby Vision debacle as much as it possibly can for the time being. So thanks for clearing that up for us.
I am fairly sure that in a couple months we're going to need to revisit this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's going to be some new streaming service with yet another Dolby Vision profile or something, right?
No, don't say it.
Don't jinx it.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do that. So you, Rob, also wanted to briefly talk about another new standard, because of course there's all the HDR stuff and HDR10s and HDR10 pluses and Dolby Visions and all this stuff, but there's another IMAX related logo that we might be seeing on some of our products that Richard and I totally missed.
Yeah, so it's called IMAX Enhanced. It got a fair amount of press. It's a joint venture between IMAX and DTS. And you can almost think of it as like the anti-Dolby certification because they're not using Dolby Vision and they're not using Dolby Atmos. the main reason I wanted to mention it and try and get as many people to hear what I'm about to say as I can is that I'm noticing on Reddit and forums and things like that, a lot of people are sort of in the mentality of checklists, right? It's like I'm buying a new TV or I'm buying a new AV receiver and I want to have a checklist of all the things. And now here's a new thing, IMAX Enhanced. Is this something I need to worry about? Is this, I'm going to buy something that says it's IMAX Enhanced and it's not going to work on my new TV or my new AV receiver? So the major thing to know is that there are IMAX Enhanced Ultra HD Blu-rays. Two titles have been announced. They are actual things that were filmed with IMAX cameras. They're going to be coming out on Ultra HD Blu-ray. And those, if you put them into a non-IMAX enhanced Ultra HD Blu-ray player and play it on a non-IMAX enhanced TV through a non-IMAX enhanced AV receiver, it's all still going to work. It's absolutely fine. It will all still function. It'll play in HDR 10 on TVs that support that. On TVs that support HDR 10 plus, it'll do that, because again, they're anti-Dolby seemingly, so that's the alternative to Dolby Vision, and it'll play in DTS:X if you have an immersive audio setup. So those are the formats, and if your equipment supports that, it'll play just fine. What the IMAX Enhanced program appears to be doing, because they've been really vague about what's actually going on, but the Sony Master Series TVs that just came out, those are the first TVs that have been officially announced as they'll be IMAX Enhanced. Interestingly, they don't do HDR 10 plus, but whatever. And then Sony's brand new 4K projectors have also been officially announced as being IMAX enhanced displays. And then Denon and Marantz have said that their top tier receivers, their brand new ones, it's going to be like their X4500, X6500, and the existing X8500. Those will get a firmware update to make them IMAX enhanced. And it's like, well, what does that do? All it really does is it gives them a mode. On your TV, it gives you an IMAX picture mode. On your AV receiver, it gives you an IMAX listening mode. And when you play an IMAX enhanced disc, it'll automatically put your equipment into the IMAX mode. What is the IMAX mode? Well, on your TV, it's basically the cinema picture preset. And on your AV receiver, it's DTS:X. It's just that it does it for you. You don't have to manually do that. It's kind of similar to the Netflix calibrated picture mode that, again, is on the Sony Master Series TVs. You go into Netflix through their built-in app, and it puts the TV into Netflix calibrated mode. What's that? It's the cinema picture mode. But you didn't have to manually do it. So IMAX is saying what they're all about is making sure that you get the director's intent. And to do that, here's a pre-calibrated picture mode, here's a pre-calibrated listening mode, and it's going to have a flag in the software to automatically put it into that mode. The one cool feature, though, is on the audio side. One of the things you can do with object-based audio, like DTS:X or Dolby Atmos, is if something is encoded as an object, you can theoretically change that object after the fact. It's not a speaker channel, where all the sounds are locked to that speaker, and sure, you could boost or cut the volume of that speaker, but then everything through that speaker is being boost or cut. You could individually boost or cut the volume of an object in the mix, which is exactly something DTS:X can do through a thing they call dialogue control. So that whole problem of things in the soundtrack are way too loud and I can't hear what's being said, IMAX Enhanced has said the dialogue in our IMAX Enhanced movies, it has to be encoded as an object. They've mandated that. So you can actually use that feature now.
Okay, you just sold me right there.
Ah.
Right? Like that is, we were just talking about that last week, actually. That is one of my big griefs with so much content, is how the soundtrack drowns out the actual content that you care about, the dialogue, even when your system is calibrated properly.
I mean, it's ironic. It's ironic.
I'm holding up two fingers, because at the very beginning of this, Rob said there are two movies that support this. That
no, that's a really good soon. Point. So, okay, what movies? That's going to make my decision. No.
Yeah.
You know, I already bought my receiver, my speakers. I'm not changing that now.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's ironic that they're like, first and foremost, we're about the director's intent, but we're going to make sure there's a way that you, the user, can change the dialogue level. So I'm like, those two things right. They seem incongruous, but nonetheless. Yep.
Hilarious. All right, cool. So new thing, but maybe not such a big thing that you need to be worried and need to rush out and replace all of
your equipment. Yes, please do not say I'm buying a new TV. It's not IMAX enhanced, so it's garbage. I can't possibly use it. It's no, this it's not that different from when things were THX certified, right? You could get DVDs that had the THX certified logo on them. It's not like they didn't play on your TV or AV receiver if your TV or AV receiver were not THX certified. But again, there was a THX listening mode and there was a THX picture mode on those things. THX DVDs didn't automatically make them go into that mode. So IMAX Enhanced has a one-up on that. It'll automatically make your TV and AV receiver go into IMAX Enhanced mode.
And you got the THX pre-roll.
That's right. I imagine
was cool.
I imagine you'll get some kind of little IMAX intro on those discs.
Right. All right, so let's get back to HDR, because you also wanted to get into some of the problems with HDR10. And this, again, was also news to me, because I've always looked at HDR10 as it's the standard. It's the base level of HDR. Mm-hmm. Everything does HDR10. There's one HDR10, and it's the same everywhere. But it sounds like that's not actually true.
Yeah. So, oh,
good grief.
We're just wrecking Richard tonight.
So as far as what content is sending out and having an image show up on your display, HDR10 is the consistent, we know it's going to be there and it's going to work type of thing. But where some people have an issue with it is that if I watch HDR10 on three different televisions from three different manufacturers, even if I calibrate my displays to industry standards, I'm not going to see the same image. And it's not going to be as simple as, oh, I know this one TV is capable of getting a bit brighter than the other two, so I'm expecting the little teeny glints and highlights to be that slightly bit brighter. Not that type of difference. Like, full-on details are invisible on one TV and visible on another, even though they're both doing HDR10. And that shouldn't really be the case. So, Yuri Gertzkin, who's super duper into HDR10, and his whole thing is like, every TV should support every form of HDR and all HDR should look the same from TV to TV. I'm like, yeah, that's a fantastic dream, Yuri. But in reality, that's an uphill battle. But he's like, the issue is that there is no standard or mandate on how each manufacturer handles HDR10. And then on top of that, we've been talking about how there's this static metadata versus dynamic metadata, right? Dolby Vision and HDR10 Plus have dynamic metadata. They have these keyframes, or, you know, in this minimal enhancement layer, there's one gray frame whenever they want to change the overall picture level. And the TV adjusts its tone curve based on that information. And in HDR10, we know that there's static metadata. You get that information once at the very beginning of the movie. One tone curve is applied to the entire movie. So HDR10 is supposed to tell your display, here is the full frame average light level of the movie as a whole. Here is the single brightest that it could ever be, the content maximum light level. It actually tells what the minimum light level could be as well. And it tells you what mastering display was used. In other words, the mastering display was like, it peaks out at 1,000 nits. So even if we don't give you the other information, you know, nothing on here is going to be brighter than 1,000 nits. So that's all cool. The TV should be able to relatively kind of tone map itself to that. It's still up to the manufacturer. Maybe they just decide, hey, everything above this level, we just clip. If there's detail in there, you don't get to see it. Or maybe they decide, we're going to be super conservative and make sure all detail is retained, but then everything looks too dark, because if it's the peak is at 4,000 nits, we made everything shrink down and stuffed it into a little darker container. Nothing can control what the manufacturers do on that side. But worse than all of that is you can go to just a document, a shared document, an open document called the HDR10 Metadata Database. It's only for physical Ultra HD Blu-rays, but people are grabbing the metadata off of Ultra HD Blu-rays and putting it in this table. And you notice you don't have to go, I don't think you have to scroll at all. Right at the top, it's alphabetical. You'll notice there are some where the metadata is all zeroed out. Or,
oh wow,
other people have confirmed that the metadata is sometimes wrong. Like, they'll say, we were using this mastering display, and it's like, actually, you're using this other one. It's like, it's not always correct.
Yeah.
So now what do we do?
And we're not talking about, like, terrible movies that you've never heard of, or, like, some little documentary or something. Like, Black Panther,
there you go,
is one of them.
All zero
Life
note,
of right? Pi is one of them. Like, the Terminator, okay, that's a library title, but Terminator 2, all zeroed out.
So when the values are all zeroed out in the metadata, what that basically is saying to the TV is, you might as well not have any metadata, at which point it's what they refer to in the industry as PQ10 instead of HDR10. PQ stands for the perceptual quantizer that Dolby invented. That's their thing that says, when the signal is at this level, here's exactly how many nits ought to be coming out of the display. That is the PQ, perceptual quantizer curve. So PQ10 is HDR10 minus any metadata. It's just the very basic signal with no extra information about that signal. It's just the signal all the way from 0 to 10,000 nits. Make of that what you will, television. That's what TVs are having to do. So
how do they get away with that? Like, how do the disc manufacturers, how are they allowed to use the HDR logo, mm-hmm. if you will, and claim HDR compatibility without providing the right information? Isn't, like, why wouldn't that be part of the agreement in supporting the format?
Well, HDR10 is a completely open source free thing. That there is no standards body for HDR10. It doesn't exist. And as some people have pointed out, it was invented by Dolby. And they said Dolby basically created Dolby Vision. People said they didn't want to pay for it. So they're like, well, here's the basis of Dolby Vision. Here's the perceptual quantizer. Here's static metadata. There you go. And when you discover what a problem that is, come and talk to us and pay us some money and we'll fix it with Dolby Vision. Although, as we talked about earlier, that's got problems too, doesn't it? I want to bring this all back. We don't have to worry too much. It's not that you're not going to see an image, but it could be the case that there's detail in that image, especially in the highlights or in the shadows, that you're just not seeing and your TV is never going to show it to you. That's just not the way it handles the situation when there is no metadata or when the metadata is incorrect. We've got the new projectors, the 4K projectors that were announced by Sony and JVC, and they've got new ways of handling HDR. Sony's like, just give us 1,000 nit data and we know what to do with that. Anything else, hit or miss, but give us 1,000 nit data. And if you have a Panasonic Ultra HD Blu-ray player, it will actually retone map all HDR10 content to whatever light level you want. So interestingly, a Panasonic Ultra HD Blu-ray player with a Sony 4K projector is a really good combo, because the Panasonic player can say, I don't care what the HDR10 metadata is, I'm ignoring it and I'm calling everything 1,000 nits.
Whoa, interesting.
Whereas JVC is like, well, we're going to look at the metadata and we'll adjust our tone curve based on the metadata instead of just having one tone curve for all of HDR. But then that's relying on the metadata. So if the metadata isn't there or the metadata is wrong, it's not going to look correct. So LG has actually been the most advanced on this. And now Sony, with their Master Series televisions coming up once again, they're on top of this. And what they've decided to do is, on LG's 2017 and 2018 OLED TVs, they have something that they call active HDR. On the 2018s, it's an actual little check mark that you can do in the settings. On the 2017s, they hid it underneath the dynamic contrast setting that you had to set to low to activate it. Don't know why they hid it in there, but that's where it is. But basically what they're doing is they're ignoring the metadata. They're like, everything that comes in is just PQ10 to us. We're going to analyze the signal on a frame by frame basis and we'll decide what to do at that point. Because what's,
so does that come out better then?
It does. You are at the mercy of what LG decides to do with that. Do they retain all detail? Do they clip stuff off? But so far, most people have been kind of happy, although lately they've been doing this weird thing where they've been kind of pumping the light level a little bit, and there's a little bit of latency from when the scene changes to when the light level changes, so you notice this little bit of pumping in the light, but they say they can fix that with firmware. Sony has sometimes chosen to clip some of it, so it might be losing a tiny bit of detail. So yeah, basically HDR is not a super happy time. It's like, I think one thing you wanted to mention was, it was something that was just pointed out by Digital Foundry and HDTV Test today, which was the situation with Red Dead Redemption.
Oh yes. So like, we've talked about the problems of there being multiple standards and stuff. One of the things we haven't talked about a lot here, though, is that, like, HDR in gaming sounds like this fantastic idea, but every time an HDR game comes out, there's people who are like, I don't know, it looks washed out on my TV, or everything looks way too bright, or everything is super dim. Mm-hmm. And it's always different from TV to TV and different from game to game. And now we've got the biggest game of the year, bar none, Red Dead Redemption 2, just came out last week, And it's a steaming pile of garbage when it comes to HDR.
Well, I'm not sure I'd go quite that far, but it's certainly not what you would have hoped for from a premier, like, quadruple A game like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. To the point now where most people are saying, yeah, just turn it off. Just turn off HDR.
Yeah.
It's, and you found a video. This will, of course, be linked in the show notes. Where some people did some real analysis on the HDR in Red Dead Redemption 2. It's not even real HDR.
Nope.
They basically faked it. So it's not real HDR, and they did a terrible job of implementing it. So just turn it off.
Yeah, they're rendering it in SDR. The original signal goes from 0 to 100 nits. That's the standard dynamic range. That's what it's being rendered as. And if you go into the game's within the game's own menu, its own settings, and go into its HDR calibration, all you're doing is moving that 0 to 100 nits up and down. Like, you can make it so that 100 nits now equals 300 or 500 nits, but you also moved the zero up at the same time.
Oh, so
it's the same range. You're just moving it up and down. That's
unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So HDR in general, I think the big problem was, I mean, there were people like Joe Kane, who's like the video guru, who they foresaw that there were going to be big problems, because when Dolby created, I mean, pretty much all the HDR we know, other than Hybrid Log Gamma, which is created by NHK and BBC over in Japan and Great Britain. Other than that, everything's sort of based on Dolby's way that they envisioned how HDR would work. And the issue was, they're like, we have these fixed values. This value in the signal means exactly this many nits. And Joe Kane all along was saying, yeah, but not everybody watches in a pitch black room. And not every television manufacturer is going to get on board with this. And like, not everybody is going to be able to, like, go exactly along that curve. So what happens if, you know, just because of manufacturing tolerances, you can't exactly match that curve? What happens then? It's maybe a little bit too strict. And we're sort of seeing the results of that, because we're seeing the manufacturers struggle and choose different ways of dealing with that. We're seeing the content side going, well, I don't know what this is going to be showing on, so I'm not even going to try to tell you what to do. Here's the signal. Do what you will, you know? We see this premier game that's just like, well, we know how to make it look good in SDR. Let's just do that. And then, you know, if it's too dark, you can brighten it, but that's about it. So at least on the gaming side, a whole bunch of companies got together, Sony and Microsoft, all the premier TV manufacturers. You got Sony again on their television manufacturing side, Samsung, Panasonic, Vizio, LG, and then a whole bunch of games manufacturers. And they got together and they formed something that they're calling the HDR Gaming Interest Group, or HGIG for short. And they've got a website. It's a .org. So they formed this group, but they're like, HDR, as far as games goes, is kind of a mess, right? We got people telling us things look too dark. We got people telling us, I was just driving through a tunnel in a driving game and I couldn't see anything on the other. It was just a white field, you know, like all the details just been clipped off, and it's not supposed to be like that. Is there anything that can be done? So what's kind of hilarious is, when we look at the movie or the television side of HDR, it's like the content is created. It's put in this container that more or less Dolby created. That container can be much larger than what your display can do, but your display is supposed to be able to look at that data, or the people who made the movie are supposed to put some metadata about that content container into the signal, and then your TV decides how I'm going to display that. The HDR Gaming Interest Group says, maybe we should kind of work in reverse, because we're rendering these images on the fly. We're not creating static images that are never going to change. And let's say there's a really bright object far off in the distance. So right now it's teeny tiny, but I'm going to walk towards it or drive towards it in the game. So it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger on the screen. How are we going to handle that so that, again, getting back to consistency, everything looks not necessarily exactly the same, but you see the same amount of detail no matter which display you're looking at it on? They're like, maybe we work in reverse. Maybe we get the television to tell the game console what it can do, and then we render the game to what the TV can do in real time. That's basically what the HGIG is proposing in their best practices. They tried to simplify a little bit by making like four different display profiles. So they're kind of a little bit generic in, you know, here's our average picture level. Here's how bright this TV can get. Pick one of these four profiles, or you can tell us all the information and we'll do our best with that for, you know, build a new database. But they're coming at it from that way. And given the number of companies that have all signed into this interest group, maybe that'll work.
That is the part of this that gives me hope, is all of the companies that are signed up on this. It's Sony and Microsoft working together in gaming, yep. which is insane to start with.
Yeah.
But it's also a bunch of game developers and game engine creators. So you've got Activision and WB Games, but you and Ubisoft and Square, but you've also got Unity, a big, huge game engine developer, Epic, who makes the Unreal Engine. You've got other hardware partners too, like HP, who makes a lot of gaming hardware, monitors and stuff like that. Samsung is there, of course, all the display technology that they have. Like, all the right players are involved here, and that's what gives me hope here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's necessary. I mean, this is, you know, if you think about it, this is higher stakes than if you're just watching a movie. Because, yeah, maybe you're not going to see all the detail in a movie or a TV show. And maybe customers who are smart enough to know better might get frustrated by that. But if your screen isn't rendering the same thing that your opponent's screen yes. is rendering, when you're playing in a game and you're not actually able to technically see the same detail, you're going to end up with a lot of pissed off customers.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I would say, the entire, just to wrap up the whole HDR topic as a whole, I would say that the issue is that multiple variables in a standards, or in the case of HDR10, standardless system has turned out to not be a great idea, which is not shocking to anyone. But we can see from the enthusiasm about something like Samsung's brand new 8K television, which they're saying can pump out 4,000 nits, which is the maximum that any content that you can get right now has been mastered to. Now, technically, the signal can still go up to 10,000 nits, but we have no content. Although, if you zeroed out all the metadata, that's what the signal thinks. But putting that aside, you know, people were super excited about, like, Sony's prototype TV that they showed at IFA and CEDIA that was, like, hitting 10,000 nits, the full thing. And people were excited about that because they're like, well, if our TVs can do that, then we don't have to worry about metadata anymore. Like, we just, whatever the signal is, you're telling me show this many nits and I can show you that many nits, and we don't have to worry that any detail is ever going to get lost. So that's what we had with standard dynamic range, right? We had this range from 0 to 100 nits. Every TV could do it. People still futzed with it and messed it up. But more or less, if you wanted to get a fully accurate picture, at least you could, because the signal matched the capabilities of the displays. In HDR, Dolby knew that the displays were not going to match the entirety of the container, but they're like, well, here's all the way we came up with a whole way we're going to know what the TV can do, and we'll translate what the signal says to do into what the TV can do, and we'll do it via metadata and all this stuff. And then the whole thing is kind of like, well, let's just get to a situation where we don't need any of that translation anymore, and then we'll finally be happy.
Awesome.
Wow.
That would be great. That would be really great. All right. Well, yeah, I think that does cover all of the HDR insanity. maybe next time we shouldn't wait a year to have you on to cover all the latest HDR stuff, and then we won't have so much to catch up on. And hopefully the next time it'll be a lot more good news. All right. So let's move on to our more normal news, I guess. So, of course, starting with some video news. All these things are going to be pretty quick, actually. ESPN Plus is a service we've mentioned a couple of times here. It's a new standalone service from ESPN that gives you access to things that aren't on all of their cable channels. It's a $5 add-on. There was news today that it's now available as an app on the Xbox One and the PS4. It's being incorrectly reported. I went looking for it. It doesn't exist. You know why? Because they did the smart thing and just upgraded their current existing ESPN app. You're going to get a brand new, completely different looking interface here. And I think what's happening inside of this app is that the whole experience changes to match what you have access to. So you log into this app, and if you have access to just ESPN Plus, which is the case for me, you pretty much just see ESPN Plus content. I'm not even offered the ability to see what might be available on ESPN or ESPN2 to stream because I don't have Watch ESPN. I think that if I did, but didn't have ESPN Plus, the opposite would be true, and I'd be able to easily watch what's, you know, SportsCenter or whatever else is going on. So brand new update. I do like the update. I think it's good. And I do want to throw a quick plug in for the ESPN Plus service. If you're into sports at all, it might be worth the $5 a month for you. If you're a hockey fan, I think it's actually really worth the $5 a month because they have games on every single night, sometimes two games a night. And they have a daily catch-up show. Think of it as like SportsCenter that's just hockey. It's a show called In the Crease. It's only on ESPN Plus. So every day you can get caught up on everything that's going on in hockey. But it's also got all the other stuff, like the 30 for 30 and all that stuff. So, and tons of other non-hockey stuff too. But that's what I focus on. So that's what I know. So brand new ESPN update for your PS4 and Xbox One app. And I think they're good. So go and check those out and get yourself re-logged into those services.
All right. The other quick video news that we have is that Starz service is now available as an add-on to Hulu. This just came out actually right before we started recording today. And the interesting thing here is that, like some of their other introductions, they're going to offer this to you with a free month trial if you want to check it out first. And then after that, it's available for around $9 a month. It's $8.99 a month as an add-on to your existing Hulu subscription. So if you're consolidating all your content in Hulu, maybe you have Hulu TV and you want to add this as an additional service, this might be a good way to go for you. Beware that we talked about this last week. HBO is not available in Hulu as 5.1 sound, even on the few devices where Hulu supports 5.1 sound. So it's very likely that Starz is going to be in the same boat. I suspect that this is the case with most of these add-on third-party packages. So just, you know, your mileage may vary, but I'm kind of wary of this one.
But Starz does have apps on most platforms. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
Or is this like the only? Okay. So this isn't like the only way to get Starz content.
No, not at all. I mean, there are many other ways that you can get Starz content. It's available as an add-on to other services. It's available as its own app. So, yeah.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Gaming. We're going to skip right to gaming, and it's also not going to take long. The deals and stuff, there aren't any worth mentioning. Just get your wallets ready for Black Friday. That's what you should be doing right now.
Do you think there's going to be a sale then? I mean, what could possibly be the... Why would you think that?
Probably not. Probably not. Right? So in terms of free games, we're right at the end of the month here. We do know the free Xbox games for November, but unfortunately, we record on Tuesdays. Sony always announces their free games on Wednesday. So sorry. We've only got an update here for the free games from Microsoft on your Xbox. The carryover game, that weird schedule, October 16th through November 15th, is Victor Vran. That's still around. If you haven't picked that up yet, you've still got a little bit more time. The new games. So starting November 1st on Xbox One, you can get Battlefield 1. That's cool. I mean, it's a major first-person shooter. It's just, what is this, 2 years old now? Like, I don't know. and the numbering here, this is that one that I like to make fun of the numbering on. Battlefield 1, the next game in the Battlefield series, comes out later this year. It's Battlefield 5. Mm-hmm. Yep. 1 and then 5. Yep. Let's stop and think about, or don't stop and think about that. So November 16th through December 15th, a game I know nothing about, but it sounds kind of neat. It's called Race the Sun. This is supposed to be like a high speed flying race puzzler sort of thing. It sounds cool and it's free, so you should check it out. And then on the 360 side, for the first half of November, you get Assassin's Creed. Which one? The very, very first Assassin's Creed ever. So that's like, I don't know, 12 years old or something like that. Backwards kinda compatible cool. on your Xbox One. And then in the second half of November, you get Dante's Inferno, a game I also never played. This is a high-speed action game set in the poem of Dante's Inferno. So again, that's your other 360 game. And check back next week when we'll cover all of, you know, the 47 games that Sony's going to make free across the various PlayStation consoles.
I know that Race the Sun game from the PlayStation VR version of it. And I keep wanting you, Josh, to grab yourself a PlayStation VR. I think you'd have some fun with it. I need one other person I know to actually have PlayStation VR.
Yeah, we'll see about that. So is it a fun game?
It is quite fun. I mean, I don't play VR for very long at a time, but it's a simple enough game that is immersive enough in the VR version that it is quite fun. I mean, you're moving at a swift pace there. So if you get too motion sick, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds vomit inducing. I'll pass on that if I do get a PlayStation VR. All right. So let's dig into what I think is the favorite segment of a lot of our fans. What's going on in our entertainment centers? Richard, let's start with you, but everyone don't go away because Rob's going to chime in too on what's going on in his. But let's start with you, Richard.
All right. So my first thing is actually going to start in my car. I know that we've talked a lot about how I'm likely to give up Amazon Music and switch to Apple Music because Apple Music would just make it easier for me to access everything I ever want to listen to in my car, since I can interface with iTunes and my iDevice very easily with my car. I found out accidentally last week that Amazon Music actually works in my car. And I didn't expect this to be the case. I knew that Audi was adding support for Amazon Music in a couple of its more recent models, and it doesn't show up where it's supposed to in my car system. There's like this other random Wi-Fi connected device thing that I've never selected because what the heck would that be? And sure enough, there I found Amazon Music. It's not quite baked yet. Like, there are labels and text prompts throughout the system that show up clearly as variable names, so they haven't quite encoded it all properly yet. But it gives me access to my entire Amazon library and the Amazon Music subscription service that I have. So I'm really happy about this accidental find.
That's great.
So I may not be switching away from Amazon Music that quickly anyway. And since I use Echoes around the house, it kind of makes sense for me to continue using that. Now, on the content front, I have been watching The Usual Stuff, This Is Us, and New Amsterdam continue to be really good. Game of Thrones, I'm almost finished on season 4, and we just published a couple of episodes from season 3 that we were talking about on Let's Talk About Thrones. And then, of course, my favorite comedies, Superstore, Modern Family, Big Bang Theory, Superstore. Man, I can't recommend that show enough. It is so, so good. Watch The Vanity Cards, too. You got to watch The Vanity Cards. Doctor Who is really good this season. I'm very, very impressed with what they've done. They had an incredibly good, poignant episode with Rosa Parks. You know, the whole thing is they travel through time and space and they just happen to be at the right place at the right time to meet Rosa Parks at that pivotal moment. And it was such a cool episode. I have been trying to catch up on Better Call Saul, because I mentioned last week I've been behind on that. I started watching something on Netflix that I think was actually a web series or something at some point, called Adam Ruins Everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've basically this guy that does his own Mythbusters-ish thing, but instead of busting myths, he busts what we all take to be realities. And it's interesting. It's kind of cool. Some of them, I think, are a little bit excessive, but I think it has promise, and there are about 20 of the available episodes, and I say it that way because there are many more than 20 episodes produced, but Netflix is making 20 of those episodes available as a collection, and I don't know what that means. I've never seen something called a collection before in Netflix, but that's what it is. Also on Netflix, I mentioned I was excited about this, and I started watching it, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Mm. This is the Sabrina, the witch character from the old Archie comics, and also kind of the impetus behind Sabrina the Teenage Witch, a kind of contemporary humorous telling of that story years ago on TV. This is awesome. I started watching it. I got hooked, and I was binging. I'm like, no, I have to stop. Edward's going to want to watch this with me. And so we started it again, and he likes it. I knew he would like it. It's a really, really good show. It's so well done. The actress who plays the lead character, Sabrina, is the girl
Kieran
who played
Shipka,
the daughter in Mad Men.
Yeah.
She is fantastic. I am so impressed with the series and really excited, actually, to rewatch this episodes that I already saw. So I can't recommend this enough.
Is that actually spun off or tied into the current Riverdale show, or are they completely separate?
I would expect that it will be at some point.
Like crossed over, Riverdale's on the CW, but...
right, but I have not noticed any intentional thing, except I believe they mention Riverdale at some point.
Yeah.
But I think the intent is that there will be loose ties, kind of the way that, Daredevil mentioned how parts of New York were destroyed. You know, there will be subtle ties between them. I don't know that they're going to actually do crossovers.
And what is this on? Is this on TV or like a streaming?
This is on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
This is a Netflix series, and there are 10 episodes. And from what I can tell, they've already purchased two seasons of it. Mm. So this is this is called Part One. So this is a part. The other one was a collection. This isn't a season. It's a part.
If it's not a season, you don't have to worry about renewing it. Right.
Yeah, like, I guess. But apparently, if there's a part one, there's got to be a part two, right? I mean, come on. Don't leave us hanging. Anyway, so I mentioned that I had been hoarding is the wrong word. I guess I should say ignoring a DVD that I had rented from Netflix DVD service literally years ago. It had been sitting on my entertainment center shelf for over 2 years. I estimate that I have now paid a total of $173 to watch the movie Prisoners, which was really good, but not $173 good.
It would have been worth a rental. That would have been absolutely fine as a rental.
Yes, it was a really good movie, but not that good. Also, while we're talking about Netflix, Netflix is now making available the second part of Making a Murderer. I am eager to watch that. I watched the first one of those. That was kind of like one of these wrongful conviction question mark kind of series. And they didn't really answer the series or answer the question, but it certainly uncovered, like Serial did, a whole lot of corruption in the system and makes you want to vote is what it makes you want to do. Mm. Because, if you think local elections aren't important and who's your sheriff and stuff like that is not important, yeah, it's important. coming up, I will be watching 2001 A Space Odyssey in 4K. Thank you, John, listener John, for reminding me that that was coming out. So I pre-ordered that, and that is going to be arriving this week. I can't wait to watch that.
People are raving about that. So, yes.
Oh, man. You know, this is, I think, the only movie that I will have owned in every format I've ever had, including HD DVD.
Huh. Laserdisc?
I would...
I never had Laserdiscs.
Okay.
I would just, and this is probably going to get me booted off my own show, but I would just like to point out that 4K still doesn't make it a good movie.
What?
What?
It took me multiple viewings to even get through it because I kept falling asleep. And the ending doesn't make any sense at all. It is not a good movie.
No,
I don't
read the novels.
Honestly,
read the novels.
Josh, you are right. It is not a good movie. It's just a masterpiece. That's all.
Read the novels. It'll help you understand. I didn't understand it until I read. Now I get it.
It feels like I need to do a bunch of drugs to understand it.
I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know.
That's it for what I've been watching. I'm going to throw one more thing in here. Every once in a while, I'm so moved by something I'm listening to and so excited about something I'm listening to that I find it necessary to actually buy the music. Yes, I still buy music, believe it or not. And the most recent acquisition was the soundtrack for the new A Star Is Born movie starring Lady Gaga and
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper. I can't remember his name. And
just
by the way,
if it's a new movie, just say Bradley Cooper and you're probably right.
Seriously. And man, if he is not a Renaissance man of the day, I don't know who is, because who knew that he was a really damn good country singer? And, oh, by the way, he taught himself French and then went over to Europe and did interviews in French.
Well, and he directed the thing. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's that, too.
Just that little bit of the movie making process as well.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Wow. And I am really excited to see this movie when it's available on disc. And the soundtrack, I'm not surprised because it's largely her, but he's really good in it. The soundtrack's fantastic. The only thing I don't like is it has these interstitial dialogue tracks. And I hate when they do that in a soundtrack, because if I'm just driving along, I don't want to listen to that. They're fun the first time, and then I just want the music.
Well, you could rip it and then, you know, tick off which ones you don't want.
Oh, I will likely take them and put them in a not monitored folder somewhere. Yes.
Before we leave your entertainment sister, Richard, can I ask you one quick question about that Cavo control center?
Absolutely.
I wanted to know we've all used Harmony remotes, and one of the nice things is, so everything in the Harmony remotes is activity based, and you press the one button and a whole bunch of things turn on and go to the correct inputs and all that. But in the scenario where something doesn't quite function right and the help button doesn't completely fix it for you, or you just want a command that you really rarely use, but you still want to get to it, you can do that on the Harmony remotes, right? You can control one device at a time, and on its touchscreen or on the app, it'll have all the buttons, sometimes even more than were on the original remote.
Yep.
Does the Cavo Control Center have anything akin to that, where you could take manual control of just one device or use a very seldomly used button somehow?
Wouldn't that be awesome? That would just be awesome. I would love that, man. That would be fantastic. Yeah, no, it doesn't do that. It doesn't do so many things. That is among the list of things that it doesn't do. Rob, you and I should talk at some point because, wow, I have a lot to say about
this. Well, it's about time we get you onto AV Rant to be our guest at some point. Josh was on years ago.
I remember
one
that.
Time. That's no good either. Man. But yeah, it's about time we get you, Richard, on. So perhaps that could be a little tease.
Let's make that happen. Maybe we could align that with when I finally get this review written.
That would be great.
All right. Well, we'll cover quickly what's going on in my entertainment center. In terms of watching stuff, other than normal hockey and football stuff, The Good Place, continuing on, setting my Plex DVR to just add on a couple of minutes. Hey, it worked. I finally don't have any issues with getting the entire episode.
You definitely need the very ending of that show every week. You really, really absolutely. Do.
Right. It's so important. So that's been good. Now I just have to deal with it's skipping commercials manually like a barbarian and all of this craziness. So that kind of stinks. On the gaming side, of course, some NHL. And now that Call of Duty Black Ops 4 is out, playing some of that when I have time, still absolutely loving that. And played and finished Life is Strange 2 Episode 1 over the weekend. You can obviously expect an episode of Story Players on that soon. We've just got to nail down some time to actually record the episode. And then because it's Halloween time of year, I thought, all right, I need to try a scary game. I haven't really played a scary game in, I don't know, the original Resident Evil on my friend's PlayStation in high school. I don't know. I don't do scary games, but I figured I should try. So I got Until Dawn on the PlayStation 4. I didn't really know much about it. Here's the really, really cool thing. Video games now, they don't just hire like really cool voice actors and stuff. They get actors and then 3D render them into the game and make them look really lifelike.
Nice.
Here's two of the actors in this game, Richard. Hayden Panettiere and oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his first name. I'm blanking
Bradley
on his
Cooper?
Whole name. No, Bradley Cooper. Yes. No, not Bradley Cooper. Rami Malek from
oh,
Mr.
Wow.
Robot. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're like the stars
and the
of this game.
Very soon upcoming Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes.
Right. So I only got to play 2.5-ish hours of this game, and I think it's roughly 10 hours. It's kind of creepy. But I wasn't like so scared I was like rushing to turn it off or anything. So I am going to finish it. I'm hoping cool. over the course of this week. It was fun. Not too scary. If you're looking for something super scary, this probably isn't it. It's more like Scream when it comes. If we want to compare it to scary movies, it's like Scream, not like The Ring. Okay. So
yeah. Oh, that's a. That's a very good way of looking at things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I can deal with Scream. The Ring. Oh my gosh. Was that creepy?
That was horrible. I won't watch any of the additional Ring movies they've made.
No. And as I think I've mentioned multiple times, that is the movie that broke my wife. She won't watch scary movies after seeing The Ring.
Understandable.
Yeah. 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 So that's it for me. I don't have any other hardware stuff going on in my house right now. So, Rob, how about you?
Yeah, well, I'll start by saying I am Canadian, so I am legally required to be a hockey viewer, and I live on the West Coast. I'm just outside of Vancouver, so my team are the Vancouver Canucks. They are one game above 500 right now, which is way more wins than anybody expected going into this very much rebuilding
sure.
season. So good on that, although they got absolutely trounced by your Penguins, Josh. So that
wasn't going to bring that up. Thanks for bringing that up.
they bounced back the next game against Minnesota, so it's all okay as long as that didn't completely knock them down for good. Yeah, doing all right. I want to get your guys's take on a couple of things. One on the hardware side. So I told this story over on AVRAN, of course, but not everyone has heard it. Last year I bought myself a 65-inch LG OLED TV, got a B7. Obviously, Richard knows how fantastic an OLED TV can look, and I'm super duper happy with it. But there is one thing that the 2017 OLEDs can't do. Any guesses what that TV can't do? 2017, not 2016, and that's a clue.
Well, it doesn't do Dolby Vision on an Xbox One.
Oh, 2017 does?
Oh, 2017 does.
I can do the Dolby Vision, but it can't do 3D. Can't do 3D.
Oh my gosh. Right. They only do
3D.
That on the C's now, I think.
They don't do it on any since 20.
Oh, they dropped it completely.
2016 was the very last year that they did it. But then 2016, they didn't have the active HDR thing that I was talking about. So it's a pretty big trade-off there. But I was I built up this.
Is it really though? Is it?
Well, since I built up a large 3D collection and I went to the trouble of converting all of them into a format that works within Plex to play them in 3D.
Oh wow, that's no easy task.
I was like, I don't want to completely abandon all chance of ever watching 3D again. So I was like, what 3D television is there that I could possibly get and put into my actual theater room? Because I've got a TV in my living room and a TV in my actual theater room. And I'm like, in my actual theater room, what could I put in there that wouldn't completely disappoint me? Could it be a 2016 OLED? Although those are hard to find and like insanely pricey because people know they're really rare. So I was like, well, there's basically the best LCD TV that was ever made that does still do 3D. And that was Sony's Z9D, which also came out back in 2016. But it's like those are still available. But the $4,500 Canadian price tag to get it from a local Best Buy was, quite a bit more than I wanted to pay. So I was surfing through eBay and there was a guy selling one for $1,100 American, which even with the incredibly bad exchange rate right now is still not too bad. But the catch was local pickup only, and he was in Arizona. Well, I made myself a road trip.
Oh, my gosh.
That was a heck of a road trip.
I drove to Arizona, picked up that TV, and drove back in 3 days total. It was
Wanted this TV.
16 hours of driving each of those 3 days. I don't recommend it, especially with... So the 65 TV did come in a box, which required me to move my driver's seat up a little bit to fit in the back of my Ford Edge. I really don't recommend driving for approximately 23 hours in that position. It's not great, but got my new Sony Z9D. So
I
moved my OLED out of my theater and put my OLED in my living room because I'm not going to watch 3D out there. And I put the Z9D in my theater. And here's where I want you guys to weigh in, because it's not as good as the OLED.
No, of course not.
It really is the best LCD, but I mostly watch movies in there. Most movies have the black bars on the top and bottom. The Z9D has like 600 some on local dimming zones. For the most part, those black bars stay inky black, but not always. A bright object gets close to the top or the bottom of the screen, and that black bar blooms up. The contrast of really small bright objects against really dark things, because my theater is, it's not pitch black, but it's very dark, so I can see that the contrast just isn't as high as the OLED. The blooming around objects, even with the local dimming, that many zones, it's so, but it does 3D. So what would you guys vote? I mean, do I move the OLED back into the theater? I mean, having the LCD in the living room where I do have sunlight coming in makes a little bit more sense because the LCD is brighter overall. Although the people who complain that OLEDs aren't bright enough for a sunlit room, I'm like, how bright do you need your TV to be? Because the OLED is plenty bright. But what would you do in my situation? Where am I going to watch my 3D?
Wow. So I guess my question would be, like, how do you watch 3D generally? Like, is it, if you have a movie, are you likely to watch it in 3D with other people, or just when you're like late at night on your own? Or is that the primary way that you watch movies and you only watch the 2D version if you absolutely have to? I mean, how important is the 3D to you, and how often are you doing it?
So not that often. It's really only movies. It's usually only me, sometimes one or two other people. And, you know, sometimes people like to check out 3D because hardly anyone has ever actually done it at home. Is it worth not having the best video experience available to me for all other content? Although, let's be clear here, the Z9D is no slouch of a television. If I didn't have the OLED to compare it to, not quite side by side, but, you know, walk out of the room and go look at the other one.
But in your media room, like, you kind of feel like you should have the TV, right? Mm-hmm, like,
well, and your audio setup. I imagine you don't have the same audio setup in both places.
I most definitely do not. No, I've got an 11-speaker Atmos setup going on in my actual theater. Out in the living room, I usually use headphones because it is sort of an open concept apartment where it is, you know, my front door is, like, not blocked off by any sort of sound barrier. So I usually actually just pop on headphones, and I'm that's where I watch TV, is in my living room, you know, more casual television, which looks fantastic on my OLED. It's not like I'm disappointed in that at all.
Yeah, but you're wasting it. You're right. Totally wasting it. I mean, you may end up watching, you may not be using it as much if it's in your theater, but it's going to give you a better experience in your theater.
Maybe I just need to put them both on like 3-in-1 stands that are on wheels and just move them back and forth when I need to. Yeah, there you go.
Are you married? That's not going to go over
well. I'm a single guy. This is how I get away with crap like this.
I was going to say, I don't know how you're going to pull that off.
Like a spouse would have let him drive to Arizona to buy this TV. Yeah. I think, like, I'm trying to approach this from not the standpoint of ridiculing you for your love of 3D, but I think you should have the best TV where the best sound is.
Mm.
So I think you put the OLED where your Atmos setup is. And for your occasional 3D viewing, and do it, like... Do it with your headphones. Do it out. Do it out in the living room. Move the Sony, the 3D TV, out to the living room.
You're a hard man to argue with, Josh. That that makes a lot of logical sense there.
That makes a lot. Yeah, I agree. It's going to give you the best overall experience. Totally agree with that.
Well, as far as
otherwise, you're sacrificing, right? Because you're like, oh, I've got the best picture, but I'm listening on headphones. No,
it's true.
Get the best of both in the same place.
Alrighty, well, there you go. Those are heavy TVs to move. Well, the OLED is not that heavy, but the LCD with all of its full array local dimming matter, it's not a light TV. So as far as TV shows that I have picked up, I did want to mention, so I'm also watching New Amsterdam. I'm enjoying that show. But God Friended Me is actually, I'm enjoying that more than I expected to. I give almost all new shows that I even have any sort of this might interest me, I give it at least a try on the pilot. Another Greg Berlanti produced show. What does he have, 8 shows on TV right now? Because he produces all of the CW superhero shows. Those are all Greg Berlanti. He's also what is it, Blind Spot, that's him, and I think there's one other that he does, and also God Friended Me. So it is the Greg Berlanti formula for sure. You know, you got the main character who's kind of got a little bit of a superpower. You've got the best friend slash love interest. You've got the tech expert, because you need to hack people. Doesn't matter what's doing you. At some point, you got to hack somebody.
Are they hacking God? How does that work?
They are. Well, it's God's Facebook account that's contacting this guy. There's a little hint of person of interest, because the God account is essentially telling him people to go and befriend and help them out. So there's a little bit of a machine telling the protagonist who to check out kind of thing going on. Single Parents is like teetering on the edge. It's actually getting a little bit better as the season goes on. So as far as a new comedy.
Is that the Wayans one?
No, I forget the name of that one. Single Parents is the Taron Killam from SNL and Leighton Meester. And honestly, the thing that's kept me in that show are the kids, because the kids, those actors are hilarious. So I'm enjoying that. And then really teetering on the edge for me is Manifest, because that is one where the concept is interesting enough, but the execution is...
Right! That's exactly what I said, yes. Yes.
pretty prone, pretty painful.
And what's funny is, like, the story is of a caliber of the kind of stuff that we would see from JJ.
Yeah.
But the production quality just isn't there to pull
or
it
off. It's very close to, like, the 4400, you know, or even The Crossing that aired during the summer and got canceled. Like, they all got a little bit similar premises. So, yeah, that one's really on the edge. But I wanted to get your take a little bit, because I'm feeling like this year's crop of brand new television shows are pretty mediocre overall. I mean, there's not a single one where I'm like racing home to make sure I watch it that night. I mean, any of these, I'm like, yeah, I could build up 3 episodes, no problem. I'm not worried about being behind and catching them on my DVR later. I mean, have you found anything that's really, I mean, like The Good Place got me excited. I wanted to watch that as it was airing. I don't have any show this year that's like that. You guys?
I'm assuming this question is to me.
Sure.
But yeah.
For me this year, the only thing that has really struck me that hard is New Amsterdam.
Okay.
I think New Amsterdam is incredibly well written, well acted.
It is definitely well
executed. Yeah. It is a very good match to This Is Us because they're already ripping your heart out. So why not just keep going for another hour? You know, so it is one of those shows that when we're done here, I'm probably going to go watch This Is Us in New Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I like to watch them the night they're out.
Well, see, I thought that show A Million Little Things was going to be like the new, you know, tearjerker one. But I really wanted to like it because, like, Alison Miller is one of my favorite actresses. And, you know, I thought Ron Livingston, no spoilers, but I thought Ron Livingston was going to be a bigger part of the show than he actually is. But, you know, has actors that I like. The pilot was really strong, but the subsequent episodes, they were so maudlin. I'm like, I can't. I'm sorry. I just can't.
Yeah, I didn't really, the concept didn't catch me enough there. The God Friended Me show kind of reminded me so much of Eli Stone. And I don't know if you remember that or not, but I liked that show, but I was like, it just the way they were promoting it sounded too much like that. With social media.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I felt like I'd already seen it and didn't need to watch it. I really haven't picked up any new sitcoms. The one thing I did mention previously is I think they've done an excellent job reformulating the Connors from the old Roseanne.
Yeah.
And I'm really impressed with what they've done there. And if they can keep it up, I think they'll have a good show there. That's really the only new sitcom, if you can call that new, that I'm watching this season.
Well, maybe give Single Parents a try and just know that Taryn Killam does get less annoying as the episodes go on, because that nearly made me stop watching early on, but I'm glad I didn't, because he does tone it, or at least has so far. Yeah. I really wanted to like FBI because Missy Peregrine, she's actually like from the exact same town that I live in, and it is a Dick Wolf production, and it's quality, but I'm just like, I just don't have the time for a show that's like, it's good, it's just, it's an FBI show. I mean, there's right. No hook. If you want a well-done law enforcement show, there is one, but I don't have the time to add that to my lineup.
And that's what that came down to, too. Yeah. I was interested in that, but I didn't end up taking it on. I did start watching Magnum, and if you were an old Magnum fan, they do a lot of fan service, and I think they've already in the second episode, well, they're up to like four or five episodes, I'm behind, but even by the second episode, they had like a tertiary character crossover with Hawaii Five-O, and you knew that was going to happen at some point. Presumably they'll get main characters together, but I think they've done a pretty good job with that show from what I've seen, but it's good. It's not great. It's not one of those things I've got to see. I just think like, yeah, they'll probably get a couple seasons out of it.
So it sounds like Rob's idea that basically all this stuff is kind of mediocre is about right, based on what you guys are saying.
Yeah.
Mediocre seems like the right word for this new slate of shows.
I think mostly from what I've seen, yeah, it seems to be that way.
The exciting stuff is on streaming now, isn't it? That's where the exciting stuff is happening.
Yeah. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, I'm telling you, gotta watch it.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's it for all of our entertainment centers. So if you want to find us, we're all on Twitter. We'll cover our stuff, and then we'll give Rob a chance here to talk about all the things that he's got going on. I'm at Josh Pollard. Richard is at Richard Gunther. Our website is at DigiMediaZone, and everything else is just over at thedigitalmediazone.com. We've got a couple podcasts to mention. I already mentioned Story of Players is going to be coming out with Life is Strange 2 soon. Richard, you had a pretty miserable guest on your last episode of Home On, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think his name is Josh. Coming out soon. Something, I forget it, actually. No, I was really psyched to have you on. You know, we were talking during the show about how long it had been. Last you were on was on the 100th episode, which was close to the beginning of the year. So it had been a pretty long while, because we used to do this together every couple of months. So this episode coming up, we're basically just kind of catching up on the news, catching up on stuff that I saw when I was out in Seattle at the Smart Kitchen Summit. And of course, all of the Google stuff that came out, and you're a Google house, Josh. So
oh, don't say it out loud. I don't want it to be true. Yeah. Okay. So yeah,
backwards into it, huh?
With me. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So Rob, where can people find you? What are you busy doing on the internet?
Well, since I'm part of the AV Rant podcast, you can come to avrant.com. That's our website. All our episodes are listed there. Also, we do, the whole thing started with we needed a way to talk. Tom and myself needed a way to talk while we recorded the podcast anyway. So we sort of fell into using Google Hangouts when Google Plus was still a thing. That's gone now. But that got rolled into YouTube Live. And even when it was Google Plus, basically YouTube recorded our thing anyway. So we just started putting that up there as a YouTube video, and people enjoy watching us live and then seeing we do a video version where we actually sort of, you know, put our heads side by side and we show some images for people send us in pictures of their home theaters that we're answering questions about, and you actually get to see those images in that if you look at the YouTube versions. That's youtube.com/avrant. And you can find me individually on Twitter. I'm at First Reflect. That's FirstReflect. And if you do want to send a question to AVRant, it's question@avrant.com. So pretty easy.
So just in case, because it's been a year, we didn't really cover what the AV Rant podcast is. So, you know, what's the elevator pitch for your podcast?
We are a home theater Q&A podcast. People send us questions about home theater and we answer them for about 2 hours every week.
The big warning that I always want to give people when it comes to listening to AV Rant, it's not that it's 2 hours long or anything like that. It has nothing to do with the host, because the hosts are some of the most knowledgeable people in the industry and they're great and they're fun. No, the big warning here is lock your wallet away before listening to the show, because you're just going to want to be like, I don't have enough subwoofers. I need to go buy more subwoofers now. You know,
nobody has enough subwoofers, Josh. Nobody. Yeah, we do aim to save people money. It is absolutely never our goal to have people overspend. We are sometimes like the anti-audiophile or the anti-forum advice place to go, because there are things that are out there that are being pitched, you know, frequently where we're like, nah, you don't need that. Or here's a much less expensive version of it that's just as good. But we do like to get into the gear lush sometimes. And if you're someone who is like, I've kind of in passing heard about Atmos, but like, who really cares or who has that? If you do become an AV Rant listener, you're going to think that everyone has Atmos, because we didn't mean to be an echo chamber. We're not even like Atmos evangelists. It's just it happens to be our audience. They're interested in constantly upgrading their theaters, and Atmos is definitely something that could be an upgrade to an existing theater. So it gets talked about a lot over there, and subwoofers, definitely subwoofers.
And you guys are my go-to guys when I have questions about equipment. I can't tell you, well, I could probably count for you the number of devices that I've bought that you've explicitly recommended for my home theater. So thank you and curse you.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, we did get Richard. How is that Kef speaker bar working out as your front three speakers? Because that was...
It is fantastic.
Awesome.
Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it.
And see, that wasn't a cheap choice by any means, but also wasn't the very most expensive option. So that we kind of aim for that.
Yep.
All right. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm ashamed that it's been a year since we've had you on. We will definitely have to get you on sooner the next time. So again, thank you for bringing all of your knowledge and wit and fun to the show and to our audience, because that's going to do it for episode 465. I've been joined by Rob H. and Richard Gunther this week, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.